Live from the heartland and the crossroads of America, it's Tony Katz today.
Senator, your colleague, Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer, gave a major speech last week in which he says things need to change in Israel, calling for a new election there. Prime Minister of that country responding by saying Schumer's comments were totally inappropriate. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, look, if you listen to the entire speech, it was a very long and thoughtful and thorough speech, nearly 40 minutes. Most folks who are hearing about it are just hearing that one sentence and the exchange between Senator Schumer and Prime Minister Netanyahu. Senator Schumer has been a lifelong, passionate supporter of the state of Israel. A core piece of his message was that for the security of Israel going forward, there needs to be a credible path to a two-state solution.
In order for there to be peace in Israel, Hamas must be destroyed, Senator Chris Coons of Delaware. The problem is you're not on the right side of rationality. And you could tell me that Senator Chuck Schumer's speech, the Democrat from New York, the Senate Majority Leader, was all sorts of wonderful. But when you call for elections in Israel, while they're at war, but you're not calling for elections for Hamas or Hezbollah, you're doing it wrong. It was disgusting and despicable. It was not in any way, shape, or form smart or valuable or courageous. Yet somehow I keep hearing that it was not just courageous, says the former speaker, Nancy Pelosi, but an act of love.
The Prime Minister's presentation proved the necessity of Chuck Schumer's speech. Chuck Schumer's speech was an act of courage, an act of love for Israel. And I wish the Prime Minister would read the whole speech.
You called for elections in a unity government that is working to destroy the terrorist threat that wants to destroy them. That isn't an act of love. It is disgusting what Nancy Pelosi is saying. Despicable. She and Chris Coons, lowlifes. You don't have to like Netanyahu. The people of Israel don't like Netanyahu. But if you call for an election, the country stops. The war effort stops, and they engage in election. And Hamas gets to regroup. A terrorist organization that after they're done with Israel wants you, Nancy Pelosi. Do you think you're safe? Disgusting. It's disgusting. And I addressed this on Fox over the weekend. I didn't even know it was going to be on, guys. Tony Katz today. What is going on? 833-468-8669. 833-GOT-TONY. It was an ugly speech. But what I addressed was far past a conversation solely about Israel. And I'm going to share it with you. Because you have seen this in your own lives, that whenever the moment comes that a leftist has to make an argument, the answer is, but Trump. And there I am. I wasn't expected to go on. I got a call an hour before. Hey, are you available? Clearly, somebody wasn't available. I said, yeah, of course. I happen to be home. I've got the whole setup. Sure. Happy to do it. What are we talking about? Chuck Schumer and his Israel comments. Yeah. Count me in. I can fly there quickly. No. You can do it from your home. Fine. I'm in. There's a Democrat named Tim Hogan who has the title of Democratic strategist. He was a spokesperson here, a spokesperson there. Everybody's a Democratic strategist. I don't know how this works. I don't know how you get that sweet, sweet strategist cash. I wouldn't mind being a strategist. I got to assume it pays better than radio. One would assume at this stage of the game. Jackie Heinrich is the host. I happen to like Jackie Heinrich quite a bit. I've never met her in person. I think she's lovely, and I think she asks interesting questions in the White House briefing room. I thought she did a good job here. So it's me and this guy, Tim Hogan, and this is how Jackie Heinrich starts the questioning.
Chuck Schumer said, and reaction coming from Republicans across the spectrum. I want to ask you, Tony, because you'll recall, I mean, just a couple years ago when President Biden said of Russian President Putin, that man cannot stay in power, right after the Ukraine invasion, the White House was bending over backwards to say that Biden was actually not calling for regime change. He wasn't calling for, him to step down from office. They really carefully walked that back. And that was talking about Putin. They did not do this with Netanyahu, our ally in Israel. Why is that?
That's a solid question. That is a solid question. It's a little bit of Jackie Heinrich letting you know where she is on this, to which I answered the question.
Because the Biden administration is not a friend of Israel and doesn't care what happens to Israel. He isn't strong on Israel. He had some really big words soon after October 7th, the attack from the Hamas terrorists on Israelis, the murder of 1,300, the burning alive of babies, the raping of women, and then it all fell apart, and now he's going to build a port for Hamas. This is not a pier in the Mediterranean. He's building a port in Hamas. I got back from Israel last Thursday. I spent a week there. I was at the site of the music festival in Re'im. I was in the kibbutzim that were burned down with the bullet holes, the death and the destruction in the north, just a mile from Lebanon, where they are expecting the war with Hezbollah. Israelis are completely united in support of destroying Hamas and destroying Hezbollah. They may not be fans of Netanyahu, that is true. But for Chuck Schumer to call for elections, when does Chuck Schumer call for elections when it comes to Hamas, when it comes to Hezbollah? When does that happen? The answer is it hasn't happened. Chuck Schumer should be ashamed of himself.
I apologize for nothing. I apologize for nothing. Everybody, I think, knew I was going to give that kind of answer, that kind of response. And we should be clear about something. Israelis cannot stand Netanyahu. There is no doubt about it. They blame him in many ways for what happened. He was in charge. You're the security guy. 1,300 of your people are dead. It's on you. You could argue that it's on Shin Bet, which is kind of like their FBI, one could argue. It's on this group, it's on that group, it's on Netanyahu. It is what it is, what it is. It's not deniable. They don't like him. That's not, calling for new elections is gross. It is to change the focus of what the issue is here. The issue is not Netanyahu, and there is not right now a right-wing government. It is a unity government. So when people like Senator Chris Coons of Delaware and people like former Speaker Pelosi say this, it's a fraud. They're engaged in narrative, not in facts. It's disgusting. This brings us to the question that Jackie Heinrich asks this Democrat, Tim Hogan.
Tim, you know, the White House has, despite responding to some of the pressure from its base to be more sensitive to the civilian toll in Gaza, with their actions, they have continued to maintain support for Israel. But this was a really stunning moment where, you know, the president said that it was a good speech. The White House couldn't say exactly what was good about that speech, maintained that they weren't walking it back, but also didn't endorse it. I mean, that requires some clarification.
Jackie Heinrich again, very direct in the question. Hold on to your hats. Here we go.
The White House couldn't say exactly what was good about that speech, maintained that they weren't walking it back, but also didn't endorse it. I mean, that requires some clarification.
It's not an explicit endorsement because the entire situation in the Middle East right now is about walking a diplomatic tightrope. And to your point, the reason we've been able to continue to help Israel to build a pier and a port to try to get aid into Gaza to help people where we've seen massive civilian casualties is because the administration has taken a responsible posture on the issue. We've seen.
Hold on just a second. First, if you're utilizing the numbers from Hamas, if those are the numbers that you're relying on, you're not a serious person. That is just a simple support of terrorists. Secondly, you're helping Israel by building a pier. It's a port that is going to be utilized by Hamas. It is a port. And they're going to steal the aid, and the people aren't going to get anything, which is what's happening now. But what tightrope? This is when I'm sitting in my chair. I'm off camera. I'm like, oh, no, 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 no. I'm shaking my head. A tightrope. It's a political tightrope. They're terrorists. This is a democracy. What's the tightrope? Wait a second. I don't care where you are on Israel. What's the tightrope here? Democracy, Israel, terrorist organization, Hamas. There's a tightrope? Was it a tightrope in diplomacy between the U.S. and ISIS? What is he talking about? But of course, this is all preamble and ramble to this.
Is because the administration has taken a responsible posture on the issue. We've seen Tony Blinken negotiating for getting aid through the Rafah crossing. We have seen Jake Sullivan and the National Security Council maintain a responsible posture. So the question is, do you want to throw someone like Donald Trump into the situation? Where it's
at that moment, I said, okay, I've had enough. What the bloody hell does any of this have to do with Trump? I could actually hear people screaming that at their TVs. Why did he bring up Trump? Trump has zero to do with this. Nothing to do with this. Look at that desperation spin right there. To which I said, okay, I've had enough. Can we stop this?
But in the National Security Council, maintain a responsible posture. Well, the question is, do you want to throw someone like Donald Trump into the situation where it's totally bombastic,
where he's
saying, you know, it is just going to be, whatever Netanyahu's government wants is going to be the policy.
Can we stop this? Can we please stop this? This has nothing to do with Donald Trump. It isn't responsible to build
a fort
for Hamas.
It is a choice that people are going to make in November, and it's about having someone responsible or a flamethrower.
There is absolutely, positively, no diplomatic tightrope.
It's a delicate situation.
You either favor terrorists or you don't. You either favor the burning of babies or you don't. And right now, the Biden administration is saying they do. They're wrong, and Chuck Schumer's wrong, and you're wrong,
Tim. That's the type of rhetoric that we would see coming out of the White House.
Stop between the two of you guys. It certainly shows that there are...
That's the type of rhetoric that would come out of the White House if Trump were president. We don't want it. That's the type of bombastic rhetoric. These are the people who will throw you in jail if you use the wrong pronoun. But it's bombast to say I'm on the side of free and thinking people, I'm on the side of the democracy, and I'm not on the side of the terrorists. That's bombast. It's a tightrope. It's a very precarious situation. No, it's not. The precarious situation is you, dear Democrat Tim Hogan, who can't figure out how to tell the Rashida Tlaib set to go to hell. You coward. You and Joe Biden and the rest of the gang. That's the precarious situation. You have got a party filled with Chris Van Hollins, the senator from Maryland, who can't figure out how to stop hating Israel.
Oh, there's no doubt that the claim that Prime Minister Netanyahu and others are making that somehow UNRWA is a proxy for Hamas are just flat out lies. That's a flat out lie.
UNRWA. United Nations Relief Work Agency, which provides nothing but support for Palestinian refugees to a crazy amount of money, by the way, had people working with Hamas on the terrorist attacks. And you know what UNRWA says? Well, Israeli soldiers coerced those statements. That is obscene. The United Nations trustworthy? They never met a despot they didn't like. every hour of every day of every week of every month of every year is coming up with some other resolution to say Israel this, that, and the other. There are a million things Israeli policy-wise one can discuss. We're discussing their existence. And Chris Van Hollen, the senator from Maryland, says nope. And Joe Biden, the president of the United States, says nope. And I have to hear from former Speaker Pelosi and Senator Chris Coons that Chuck Schumer gave a courageous speech. Courage is putting the helmet on, putting the weapon in your hand, and taking out an enemy that wants to destroy you. That is courage. Courage are those people to the north and those people around Gaza who want to get back to their homes and keep farming. By the way, does anybody ever discuss the fact that all those people around Gaza and all those kibbutzes, all those neighborhoods, all those homes, they were the ones working with Palestinians, bringing them in? That in a town, Kfar Aza, and towns near there, the mayor was trying to build factories so Palestinians would have a place to work. They killed him in front of his sister-in-law's home. I met the sister-in-law. I stood in the place where he died. Courage. Chuck Schumer? We're all nuts. But every time they don't like a subject, they bring up Trump. Every time they want to change a subject, they bring up Trump. Don't you ever let them, guys. I didn't. Don't let them. I'm Tony Katz.
With a little more love and a little more laughter, a little more good vibes, less disaster. You know today would be a very good day, just to have a good day.
Justice Jackson?
So my biggest concern is that your view has the First Amendment hamstringing the government in significant ways in the most important time periods. What would you have the government do? I've heard you say a couple times that the government can post its own speech, but in my hypothetical, kids, this is not safe, don't do it, is not going to get it done. And so I guess some might say that the government actually has a duty to take steps to protect the citizens of this country, and you seem to be suggesting that that duty cannot manifest itself in the government encouraging or even pressuring platforms to take down harmful information.
That is Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson. As the Supreme Court debates a case that was brought through a series of courts already, Tony Katz today, what's going on? This has to do with whether or not the federal government can reach out to platforms, social media platforms, and say, hey, that's misleading, that's dangerous, we can't be having that. Does the government have a role to play in combating that? And can they do it? This comes out of a case out of Louisiana, a federal court case, two Republican attorneys general, Missouri and Louisiana, a series of social media users. The challengers contend that their social media posts on platforms such as Facebook, YouTube, and X related to, for example, COVID-19, the 2020 election, were removed or downgraded at the government's direction. And so this has been moved down the line. A district judge, Tarity Doughty, agreed with the challengers that the federal government had violated the First Amendment by coercing or significantly encouraging, those are the quotes, the content moderation. There's a great write-up of this over at SCOTUSblog.com. So now it's in front of the Supreme Court, and Ketanji Brown Jackson, Justice Jackson, is saying, you're saying that the government has no role in this, but that's one heck of a statement to make. Justice Samuel Alito is asking a bit of a different question.
Platforms, and they want to have regular meetings, and they suggest, why don't you suggest rules that should be applied, and why don't you tell us everything that you're going to do so we can help you and we can look it over. And I thought, wow, I cannot imagine federal officials taking that approach to the print media, our representatives over there. If you did that to them, what do you think the reaction would be? And so I thought, the only reason why this is taking place is because the federal government has got Section 230 and antitrust in its pocket.
That's an interesting take. His argument is, would you do that to the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal or the Associated Press? Tell them not to do this. Tell them not to do that. Tell them they can't do this. You're doing this to social media because you have more control over it. This argument is ongoing. We'll break it down in the days ahead. This is Tony Katz today. Who's in? Who's out? How much money are people going to lose betting on March Madness? The answer is a crazy amount of money, people. Tony Katz today. What is going on? Find it all at TonyKatz.com. The phone number, 833-GOT-TONY, 833-468-8669. Connecticut, Houston, North Carolina, and Purdue. Those are your top seeds. And then, of course, who got left out? JMV joins me right now, radio host out of Indianapolis at 93.5, 107.5, The Fan. He is the voice of sports in Indiana and across the Midwest. Let's take a look at this thing. These top four right here, these number one seeds, Connecticut, Houston, North Carolina, Purdue. Out of those, who is the top of the top?
Well, right now it's UConn, I think, Tony, without question. If you're going to ask me of a team of that level that's playing the best basketball right now, really throughout this upcoming tournament that's playing the best basketball, it is UConn. And if I were somebody out there and I was simply going to play a little wager game on this, for them to go back-to-back, I think would be as strong a bet as you're going to find. Now, we're always going to have upsets. And it's not going to go chalk. It's never going to go chalk. But you're talking about a team and the way they played, the way they ended the season. There is nobody as of right now, Tony, without injury, given the situation they're in, that is playing as well as UConn. So if you're a betting person, UConn to repeat is probably your play right here to start the tournament.
You know, in looking at these number ones and they get to go up against 16 seeds, when you take a look at that and you realize there are still some play-in games to happen, certainly North Carolina and Purdue don't quite know yet who they're going to face. You got to take a look at Purdue losing as the number one seed last year to number 16, Fairleigh Dickinson, or growing up in Jersey, we refer to it as Fairleigh Ridiculous. Those kinds of things sting. And as you have mentioned in many of our conversations, Purdue being ranked number one, Purdue being ranked number three, none of that matters to the Purdue fan. This is what matters, getting past the first round and finally for all of that team has been able to offer and Zach Edey and Coach Matt Painter to actually make a run. If they don't make a run, man, people are going to look at Coach Matt Painter very askew.
Well, it's ugly, and here's why. It is great to win. You play basketball, you win. You win the Big Ten outright by, what, three games. Then win the Big Ten Conference Tournament, you lose in the semifinals to Wisconsin. But as you talked about, their history and the Boilermaker fans, all they're thinking about is when they clock in coming up later on this week in Indianapolis for the first round games. And honestly, I look at it as I thought if you're looking at a team that got a good draw, I thought Purdue got a good draw to get to the Sweet 16. Let's just say, for example, they move on past round number one as they should. They get the winner of TCU and Utah State. Danny Sprinkle of Utah State had to basically start all over. You know, he picked up a team that had lost 23, and they went to the transfer portal and basically retooled their team. And, you know, that's part of what the transfer portal, Tony, that's what it can offer. You can retool on the fly like that. It can also tear down. It can tear down many of teams, but it has worked for Utah State. The thing that would concern me, I guess, about the other team is TCU. TCU with Jamie Dixon, it is a good, solid team that is built around very quick pressure on the ball, guard play. And if there is anything that has been an issue for Purdue that has led to these shortcomings you're talking about in the postseason, it has been quick guards that they struggle to contain. Then all of a sudden, Tony, in these moments, like Fairleigh Ridiculous did last year in Columbus, Ohio, you get hot from three. Three's better than two. If you get hot from three, it's anybody's game. That would be the lone matchup, if it happens, that I would give pause to think a little bit more clearly about Purdue. But I think otherwise, as far as the top seeds go, 1 through 4, that's only, I think Purdue has, to me, the easiest, if you want to call it that, track to get to the Sweet 16.
That being in the Midwest section there. Talking to JMV, our sports guy. You can find him on X. What is it, JMV 1070? Is that where they find you?
At JMV 1070, Tony Katz. Oh, it's hopping. It's cooking right now, buddy.
Let's talk about snubs, because there's a couple to get to. And the first one is Oklahoma. Oklahoma does not make the tournament. This is, I think, the third year in a row for Porter Moser, the head coach over there. The Sooners not being in, and they made their run. They made their push. They're not in this tournament, but there's a bunch of teams that we can point to. St. John's left out as well. Patino not going to make it. And then for some of my Indiana people, I talk about our Oklahoma people listening on KRMG, Indiana State, your Sycamores, which were a Cinderella kind of team. They were actually ranked for a while. They go to the Midwest Valley Conference Championship. They lose to Drake 84-80 and find themselves on the outside. Take those three. Which one's the biggest snub to you?
Well, I mean, to me, because it's personal, it's Indiana State. But I gather with the quad one wins that Oklahoma has, why they'd be upset, why Porter Moser would be upset today. And when you look at the Big East, Tony, you look at the Big East with three teams. I mean, St. John's got hot late. Seton Hall was right there on the bubble, on the fringe as well. And Providence with Kim English's team, they were right there too. The way that it was explained last night, and it's accurate, is that you had all these conference tournaments that ended up not having the favorite, the one seed, or a team. You know, you're talking about, I'll give you a great example here, Florida Atlantic. You know, for a team like Oklahoma or St. John's or Indiana State, Florida Atlantic, they needed to win the American, and they bowed out in the semifinals because, you know, they were going to be in. I think they ended up as an 8 seed. They were going to be in anyway. So what you do is you have a team, in this case, that steals a bid. You had, I believe, if you look at an average, Tony, you have 2 bid stealers per tournament. And this one, and it's just, I guess, my luck, my good fortune, and the good fortune of Oklahoma fans, what have you, is that there were 5 bid stealers legit. And then when you look at that at the tail end, those that were on the bubble, that is why their bids got hijacked and ultimately went someplace else. The bid stealers around the nation, it was a really bad 4 days for those teams that you talked about, including my Indiana State Sycamores. Basically, from Thursday through Sunday, it was pretty brutal.
So now we take a look at this bracket. You've had a chance to kind of see how it plays out. Yes, you got a couple of play-in games that have to happen. So far to you, what is the biggest surprise? What is the biggest disappointment?
Well, I mean, I kind of look at it, I guess, as a surprise, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, with what I think should be the relative ease that the Boilermakers get to the Sweet 16. I really wasn't. Florida Atlantic was another one, too. My friend Dusty Mays, their head coach down there, I went to high school with him. It's kind of interesting. His matchup, Tony, is with Northwestern in round number 1. Florida Atlantic and Northwestern, here's something for you to watch for. So Dusty May, the head coach of Florida Atlantic, of course, they went to the Final Four, lost to San Diego State last year. He is playing Northwestern. Northwestern has a junior named Brooks Barnheiser. Brooks Barnheiser from Lafayette Jeff High School in the state of Indiana is coached by his dad, Mark Barnheiser. And Mark Barnheiser coached Dusty May in high school at my high school, Eastern Green. How about that for an interesting round number 1 matchup right there? But yeah, Florida Atlantic being where they are, probably a surprise. But I really wasn't taken by a lot as far as, you know, Auburn maybe not getting the love that Auburn maybe should have received might be it too. But there really wasn't a lot that surprised me as far as just in general looking at the bracket.
Yeah, I'm looking over it right now and looking at some of these matchups, and you're right, in the East you'll have Florida Atlantic and Northwestern, as you mentioned. In that first round, it's interesting that you think the Midwest there is going to be the easiest of these 4 divisions. Which one's the toughest? Who's got the longest road?
Well, I think UConn's got a battle on their hands, too. I don't think there's any question about that. I'm always scared when I have to. One of my Final Four includes Arizona. because they're in the category teams that are always ready, willing, and able to screw you over if you pick them. They're a talented team, but I don't know if I would be ready. I've got them going to the Final Four. I don't know if I trust that very much. And, Tony, here's another one, too, to think about. I think the better team, arguably, if it's not UConn or Purdue this season as a whole, has been Houston and Kelvin Sampson. But, you know, they've had some stumbles here at the end. And, you know, you look at, you know, what they did against Iowa State. Iowa State's another team that looks really good right now. People thought they were a little bit underseeded. Maybe they needed to be on the one line as well. Houston is another team that looked to be the part maybe midseason, but here at the tail end, hadn't really played as well as what you thought. So just some looks to teams that probably should be there at the tail end. But as we know with this tournament, I mean, rarely are those teams there. I mean, heck, we talked about Florida Atlantic last year, San Diego State last year. It never seems to be what we think. But those are some of the surprises. Those are some of the concerns I would have if you had any of those teams close to chalk, either a one or a two seed, going to your Final Four destination.
Talking to JMV, our sports guy here. Let me give you two more things to pick your brain about. And one of those is the three seed in the South, Kentucky. This is John Calipari. And lots of name recognition, lots of money, great record in terms of the amount of wins, but absolutely no movement year after year when it comes to the bracket, right? We're not hearing Kentucky, a vaunted name of yesteryear in today's world. Names like him, guys like Rick Pitino, exactly how much more do they have in the tank? Or are we about to see a move to a new guard?
Well, I mean, Tony, I do think we're going to see. I think we're watching it right now. I mean, I think you see it in college basketball. You saw it year before last with Jay Wright, with all that is going on between NIL and transfer portal stuff. You just get sick and tired of having to mess with it, especially if you have those level of accomplishments as he's had at Villanova. You look at Nick Saban this year. You know, Nick Saban last week said, his wife said, you know, why do you want to mess with this anymore with the way that it is compared to the level in which you have reached? You're going to see that, Tony, more and more. But one of the, actually two of the examples you gave, John Calipari and Rick Pitino, I don't see them stepping away. Now, Kentucky fans want to get rid of, I mean, really a high percentage of Kentucky fans want to get rid of John Calipari. That's going to come down defense. I don't think he's going to go anywhere. He's going to stay right there. But the fans, because of the lack of high-level elite success that that team has had under his leadership here in recent history, fans of Kentucky, the Commonwealth, would like to see a change right there. I don't think that's going to happen. I will say this for Rick Pitino at St. John's. It kind of appeared at the end of the year that you really saw a rejuvenated head coach that, again, has accomplished nearly everything, right? And you kind of wonder, all right, why do you got to jack with this right now? I mean, you're Rick Pitino. You've won at every stop. You know, you're going to go down in history as one of the best. Why do you have to mess with it? But it seemed like that he got juiced out of coaching up that team this year, and especially down the stretch before they got snubbed. So I would think he and Calipari hang around. However, the point you make about a lot of coaches not wanting to mess with it and going a different direction, Tony, with the transfer portal and NIL, here's what's going to happen, especially with NIL money. It is going to be more important for that money to be designated for the best players you can bring in than it is paying an incredibly high dollar amount year after year for a head coach. We are going to see that balance of financial power make a major shift as long as the rules as they are right now are set in place.
Before I let you go, make your pick. Who is going to win it all?
Oh, you're going to love this, buddy. You're going to love it. I mentioned, too, I have Iowa State in the Final Four. I have Iowa State. I have Arizona, which I don't trust, Houston, and Purdue. I have Purdue winning it all. Purdue's going to win it all. How about that? Does that sound like, because I'm in the state of Indiana, do I sound like I'm kind of brown-nosing a little bit?
You sound like a guy who has Matt Painter on speed dial. So you sound like.
Well, I mean, can I give you one quick little piece of background?
Sure.
Being from the state of Indiana, as I am right here, I'm sick and tired of following around a bunch of losers. That's all we ever do around here is lose. All we ever do around here is lose and talk about cap space and talk about draft leverage. And all we do is talk about what the hell is going to happen 5 years down the road. And frankly, I'm sick and tired of it. I am ready to see and to be a part of, to cover, to talk about a winner. So this is a not only am I going to pick Purdue to win, Tony, I think it's a must win. It's a must win for Purdue. And even if you're an IU fan in this state or a fan of anybody else, who cares? Get some winning back in this state, because we've slept rock around as a bunch of losers for far too long. It's time to embrace some winning, and the Boilermakers are going to throw us that life ring, the life ring of winning on this losing Indiana sinking ship. How about that?
He also has Purdue winning the presidential election. So there he is. JMV, he is the voice of sports. I appreciate you taking the time. I've got more to get to. This is Tony Katz today. The RNC, that's the Republican National Convention, is in Milwaukee this year. And to protest, there's a bar that's going to close for the RNC, because I don't want to support that tomfoolery. The guy would rather close than serve a beer to a Trump supporter. Tony Katz. Tony Katz today. What's going on, everybody? You know, they used to tell you that you have to bake the cake. I don't want to make a cake for a same-sex marriage. Too bad, you got to bake the cake. If you don't bake the cake, we sue you. The state goes after you. We go after your mother. We call you a bigot. I just don't want to. I don't want to decorate the cake. I'll actually bake it. I don't want to decorate the cake for the same-sex marriage or the trans this. Well, you have to. Otherwise, you're a bigot. Otherwise, you're this and that. They actually sue over it. These people are closing. No one's going to force them to stay open, and no one should, because you do not have to decorate the cake and you don't have to be open. I'm a believer in the Liberty Society. And in a Liberty Society, you don't have to serve anybody you don't want to serve. I actually oppose the idea of the public accommodation based on the grounds of, are we a free society or not? Not that it's smart. You don't want to serve me because I'm Jewish. You don't have to. I think it's weird. I think I'm going to tell other people. I hope you go out of business. I don't think it's a smart practice, but you should be allowed to not serve me or someone who's white or someone who's this, that, or the other, right? It's your business. Serve who you want to serve. You don't want to serve people on the political left? Don't. You don't want to serve people who are under 5'4"? Don't. I actually believe in that kind of freedom. And you're like, that's ugly. Well, freedom is ugly, right? It's also beautiful and the best game going. I know it's hard for some people to understand that, but clearly you being able to choose what you do with your business is what's best. People don't want to be open during the RNC in Milwaukee. Well, let them. They're just going to lose a lot of money. Bad business practice, if you ask me, and I don't think I should be involved in people's bad business practices. Any which way you look at it. This is Tony Katz today.